Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello everyone, welcome to this edition of What in the World is Dyscalculia? I'm your host for the podcast, Dr. Honora Wall, and What in the World is Dyscalculia is produced and distributed by EduCalc Learning. You can visit EduCalcLearning.com for lots of free information, services, training, and even online math classes, both for teachers and for students who want to learn more or master math while they have dyscalculia. You can also visit the dtri.org, thedtri.org. That's the Dyscalculia Training and Research Institute, a nonprofit organization that has a mission of changing the lived experience of people with the math learning disability, dyscalculia. So enough of that. Let's get into the podcast. I want to talk to you today about two research articles that I was reading recently and had some interesting findings. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that we need more research on dyscalculia, and there's a lot more out there for dyslexia, autism, ADHD, not so much on math or dysgraphia, the writing-specific learning disorder, dyspraxia, the physical space learning disorder. So we need more. But let's talk about what's already out there, because there is quite a bit. One type of research that's very common right now is what we call a meta-analysis. And what that means is that researchers found all the articles they possibly could that focused on certain inclusion terms, whatever the researcher was trying to look for, and gathered all of the information together. If you read a meta-analysis, you're going to find that they describe where the articles came from, how they decided which articles to include or not, and for each of those articles, what kind of study was done, how it was set up, and what the results were. So a meta-analysis is a great way to kind of get an overview, that bird's eye view of what's happening around a situation. So I found two that I wanted to talk with you about today. One is a meta-analysis from 2023 that came from some researchers in Indonesia. And that's very common. A lot of research on dyscalculia is coming from other countries outside of the United States. We do have some great researchers here in the U.S., including the researchers involved in the second meta-analysis, which was published in 2015, led by a team of researchers at University of Florida, specifically Dr. John Tay Myers, who is now at Georgia State University and does a lot of work in the United States researching dyscalculia. So we do have some local people as well. But let's talk about both of these articles and see what they came up with. So the meta-analysis that came from Indonesia included 13 studies, research studies, that looked at learning aids for children with dyscalculia. Some of the names were not familiar. Out of those 13 studies, some were, like Brian Butterworth and Lorillard. And so we do have some key players in the field of dyscalculia. That's important if you're talking to someone about getting training on dyscalculia, or if they say they're an expert. I want you to listen to the researchers they talk about and make sure they're using names that you've heard before. Dr. Myers, Dr. Ansari, Dr. Butterworth, Dr. Mazzocco. There's quite a few names that come up quite a bit. All right, back to the meta-analysis out of Indonesia. What I found really interesting with their 13 studies is that only one was quantitative, looking at a measurable statistical difference in performance, and 12 were qualitative, looking at personal feelings, experiences, and interpretations. Now, both of these are completely valid forms of research, but when we're looking at schools and we're talking to educators who need research-based practices, we need more quantitative results. Because qualitative is important, but that's more about how someone feels about an experience or what their common experiences were. And we look for shared experiences. Quantitative shows a difference in some kind of performance, or a lack of difference, and then we know whether or not something is effective or not for a certain group of students. So we really need more of that. The researchers from the United States that was published through University of Florida, they did not really break down how many studies were quantitative versus qualitative. They included 15 different studies, and their meta-analysis did a much more in-depth look at the methodology and results of the individual research articles included. The meta-analysis out of Indonesia is a little more broad-based, and that could just be differences in research style, in the goals of the research study, or maybe it's the commonly viewed method of doing interpretive analysis in different countries. So all of these reasons determine what kind of research you're reading. And I point that out because I know not everyone listening is a researcher or enjoys going to Google Scholar and reading research articles. They can be a little dry, and a lot of people don't like the statistics. So when I bring you a review of articles, and I hate to even say review, I'm not here to say if anyone's research was good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just here to bring you their results. I want you to know why studies are written the way they are and how research is conducted. Until you've really gone through the process of running your own research study and doing a dissertation or publishing a study somewhere else, it's hard to really understand the intricacies and complexities of a research study. I know we're all looking for research-based practices and evidence-based practices. It can be hard to find because we're very precise with how research is done. That's how we know it's something we can trust. Okay, so now you know why these two meta-analysis articles exist and their similarities and differences. Let's talk about what they found when they looked at this grand total of 28 different research studies on dyscalculia. A lot of it is stuff that we've already talked about in these podcasts, or you can find on either of my websites if you're looking for information. But these are some of the studies that really support what we're talking about. First of all, increased metacognition, very helpful for students who have the math learning disability. Metacognition means thinking about what you're thinking about. And there's a lot involved in pausing, taking a moment to look at a math problem and say, what is happening here? How am I going to solve this? What's a good plan of action? What do I need to solve this? And do I have those things readily available? Depending on grade level, that could be any of the manipulatives that we usually talk about. If you're solving a problem that's involving addition and subtraction, probably going to be helpful to have a number line or a 1 to 100s chart. If you are doing a longer problem with a lot of borrowing or carrying, then you might want to do step by step with a calculator. If you're looking at a problem that involves multiplying and dividing, especially with decimals or some of those larger multi-digit problems, then a multiplication list and or a calculator are going to be very, very helpful. If you are doing a problem that involves graphing in later stages of math, or you're solving for roots or you're factoring, then having notes that compile all of our perfect squares, for example, or something that's color-coded to show the y-intercept versus the slope and where it is in the equation correlated to where it is on the graph. Those external tools can trigger memory, can help you refine your answer. Those are things you would need while you're solving a problem. So that's part of metacognition, making sure you know which tools are appropriate for the task and that you have them handy. For students with dyscalculia, we definitely want them to have those same tools available during classwork, during homework, and during assessments, because the problems of the parietal lobe losing math information over time, it's not like that only happens Monday through Thursday, and on Friday quiz day, your parietal lobe suddenly works perfectly. That's not true. So we want to keep those accommodations during assessments. And we want to use metacognition and teach students how to use metacognition strategies. So that's one thing. Another thing that came up was explicit instruction. We talk a lot about that in the podcast. I use a lot of explicit instruction in the math courses I designed for students with dyscalculia. And what we mean by explicit instruction is that you just say what's going on. You just tell people exactly what's happening and what they need to do. There's no mystery. It's just math. We don't need to make it a mystery. It's pretty straightforward how you solve a problem. And we tell students exactly how we want them to solve a problem. We let them know exactly where they're going wrong and what we need them to do in order to be right. And a lot of the research studies listed in these meta-analyses did talk about that piece of that immediate feedback. The idea of explicit and embedded instruction, which is a term that came up quite a bit in the UF meta-analysis, you might see it in research studies labeled as EAI, explicit and embedded instruction. And what that really means, teachers, you're already doing it. It means that you take advantage of those teaching moments, that you're really plugged in with your student. And when you see that they're solving something incorrectly, you tell them. You step in right then and you show them exactly what they should be doing differently. So it combines using a teaching moment, using immediate feedback, using explicit instruction. That makes a measurable difference in the academic performance of a person who has dyscalculia. Some of the other things that came out of these two studies were that sometimes a software program or using an abacus, just a, you know, really specific kind of manipulative, or using programs that increase working memory, all of those things can give some sort of improvement either in motivation, self-confidence, or performance. And we know that those things are true because they come up in different research studies. We also know they're true because we use them in the classroom already. So really, what I want you doing for students with dyscalculia is taking what you're doing and do it more. Do it consistently. Do it constantly. Do it with fidelity. Don't just tell students that the manipulatives are available. Require that they use it and show you how they use it. And then you step in, just like Vygotsky told us, with the more knowledgeable other. The best way to learn is to have someone who has a better understanding than you helping you out, and then you discuss it. That makes a huge, huge difference. I would love to see a qualitative study that talked about a student's feeling of self-worth and engagement and connection after having intervention that really utilized those skills. Again, as teachers, we know that we have a much better academic performance and achievement with students. When we have that connection, we know that we want to build that with our students. We're already trying to do that with students in our classrooms because we know it's important. Oh, and also it's effective. But we didn't get into teaching just because it's a little factory and we're trying to push out students who hit academic achievement goals. We got into teaching because we really like interacting and passing along knowledge to tiny people, to children. If you're in adult ed or if you're working in the higher ed setting, you like imparting knowledge to a peer group. But we really like this interaction. That is a key part of working with students who have dyscalculia. They have to know you're on their side. And they have to know that you recognize they're already working really hard. And they have to know that you're going to help them find the best method for them so that they can really master math. So, to wrap all of that up, if you're looking for some research-based practices and some evidence-based strategies, this is a great case for things you already know how to do. Use your teaching moments. Use explicit instruction. Use metacognition. And then try out different software or manipulatives and see what works best for your students depending on the grade level and topic. And keep those things during class time, during homework time, during math intervention time, and during assessment time. That's how we're really going to make a change. If you are looking for either of these articles, I will try to get them up on the websites so that we have a bank of articles and you can go read this information for yourself. I think that's always exciting to read the original source. And of course, these have lengthy references that tell you the studies they used and other people they reference. So you can go down the rabbit hole of finding research on dyscalculia and getting more knowledge for yourself. If you're not into reading a bunch of research studies, totally get it. I'll be bringing more of them to you in the podcast. And one of the goals for the second half of 2025, as we finish this school year and start moving into the next one, is to have more blog posts that really dive into the research. That way, when you're talking to colleagues, parents, and other administrators, you have some original sources that you can cite in those conversations. So, thank you for listening to this episode of What in the World is Dyscalculia? If you have any questions or comments about these articles or other research you'd like to know, is it out there? I'll be happy to go see what I can find and put the information into future episodes. Make sure you're checking out the website so you can stay up to date with the most current dyscalculia information. And you can also find me on social media. We have a great teacher support page on Facebook. That's a public group. You can find EduCalc Learning on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. We have a YouTube channel, Honora Wall. That has a lot of different interviews and our social media reels and these podcast episodes. So plenty of ways of getting information to you. If you are a teacher, you might want to look into our weekly workshops. There's information about that on educalclearning.com. And you might want to look into our online math classes for students who have dyscalculia. These are great for homeschool families, and also they're being used with great success in schools around the country and in tutoring centers. So lots of great options to support both teachers and students who want to know more about the math learning disability. I'm Dr. Honora Wall. Thank you for listening to What in the World is Dyscalculia, and we'll see you again soon.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.